Hi, and welcome to Coffee and Classic Movies by
Joshua
and Korea. We're husband and wife, and we love to brew and enjoy some coffee
and some awesome movies
and talk about them. So we hope you enjoy today's episode.
Enjoy.
Hey, y'all, it's Korea.
Are you serious? I'm Joshua.
We're here in Richmond, Virginia.
Are you done?
No. Thanks for tuning in.
We're not in Mississippi, babe.
To Coffee and Classic Movies.
Episode number 14.
Wow. Got another good cup of coffee as always.
Yes, that's pretty smoky.
Yes. This definitely reminds me of camping. I've only been camping once. Would love to do it again.
You have no clue what camping is about.
But no, like seriously, when I took a sip and it just brought me to a fire, like, you know, roast, you know, doing the, oh gosh, the s'mores. I was like, what is it?
Roasted popcorn? What are you talking about here?
Not popcorn.
You just
did s'mores? Well, you've been camping more than I have.
We roasted other stuff and did just sweets, you know.
Okay.
Well, you want me to describe
we did
it?
Too. We had chicken and potato. It was good.
No. Anyways, so tonight, or this episode, we have Blanchard's Base Camp Blend, which is a little bit, some salted caramel, chocolate, and it's kind of like a smooth, but we also know this very smoky. Not in a bad way, but in a very good way. Quite different.
Yeah.
I would say about any of the blends we have had so far for our movies, this is definitely a very smoky taste to it.
Yeah, none of them have
Which
tasted
is not bad.
The same.
Actually, probably the most smokiest coffee, the most smoke flavor coffee I've ever had.
I agree.
But I like it though. I'm actually kind of enjoying it. You know, we're drinking hot coffee on a kind of warm day. We really have to start investing in our cold coffee press so we can make some cold brews, please.
And by the way, you might be wondering, why are you talking so much about your coffee? It's what we do. We like to see what kind of coffees are out there and try to pair them with the movie.
With a classic movie.
Yeah, and talk about it all.
Together.
This is a whole bean, which was grounded up.
Of course, we get nothing but whole bean, huh? That's how we roll. It's because you get the reason why we get whole beans because you get to grind up as you go. The problem is when you grind up, we have a ground up coffee already, it starts to lose its flavor as you begin to open the bag and stuff. When you have a whole bean, it takes a lot longer, so you can grind as you go, grind up as you go, and so you can still have that freshness. It's just the flavor pops more when you make a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm. The aroma.
Oh, the whole house is smelling good.
Heaven.
That was a different movie, honey.
Let's get into this one. This movie.
What movie is that, hon?
So let's go to Mississippi.
Okay.
And
why don't you just read it, what it said, the description?
I'm trying to find my notes.
You had it up. You told me to clue you
19,
in, and then you messed it up.
1930s. Yes, 1930s. Let's go to Mississippi, 1930s. We have three escaped convicts. They're searching for hidden treasure. You're probably thinking of the movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, I think people might get confused when they heard you say 1930s. That this film was made in the 1930s. No, but the scene is set in 1930s.
The story, I thought I said that. The story set in 1930s. The movie actually came out in 2000.
That's right.
Coen Brothers.
By the Coen Brothers, which is another, we've done how many movies from Coen Brothers, I think? Two or three?
I lost count, but I really like the Coen Brothers.
Yeah, they're very good. I would say they're very good with their script writing. They usually, anytime they do a film, their scripts usually get nominated for best scripts at the Oscars.
This one was nominated for two.
Yeah, script and music, right?
I think so.
Typically,
it won some. Of course, it won other stuff.
Susie Rapids. Right there. Yep. Golden script, Globe. Script, and everything else. Yep.
Roger Deakins. He's a great cinematographer.
Yeah. No. Well, that's what makes this movie stand out is the cinematography in this film, because if you look at the colors, they actually had to hand digital the colors into the film. It wasn't, they were trying to look for filters to put onto the cameras and stuff as they filmed it, but they couldn't find the right filter that they wanted to portray to make it look like it, in a sense, it was, that film was in that era. So what they had to do is digitally go back and paint the colors into the frame, each frame.
Oh, cool. Do you know how long that took them to decide?
It took several weeks for them to complete the job, because you're going frame by frame.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of work, but that's probably, and that's no wonder it was nominated for cinematography. That's kind of like reminds me of Roma. When Roma, the cinematography in Roma is just so superb. You've never seen black and white like that before. And kind of like this film here is that the filter that's used, it's almost like a black and white, but then it has color to it. It's got faint colors in it. And it was just quite interesting. So the cinematography is just magnificent. Surprised it didn't win, but I don't know what it was up against that year. So to sit here and go, oh, it should have won. But no, the cinematography is just outstanding. And you know what's so funny is I haven't really seen that type of cinematography done since.
Yeah.
So, which is really cool. But besides just the cinematography and writing, the actors really make this film a classic. And the story itself makes it a classic.
How they tell a story is so creative. This is actually an adaptation, and they drew a lot of inspiration from Homer's epic poem,
but also
the Odyssey.
But also when they were writing it, they were thinking about Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
Dorothy trying to make her way home. In a sense, that's what your main character was trying to do.
Well, that's what them getting home. Spoilers. Spoiler alert.
Who cares?
That's what we do. We give away stuff too. It ended. They realized more and more that their journey home was kind of the, I don't know what to call it.
Kind of like, it's, yeah.
The main theme.
But in a sense, yeah. You're absolutely right, and you kind of see it, and you can, if you look at it from that essence from Wizard of Oz, yes, you see it, but if you look at it from the essence of the Odyssey, you see that too as well. There's a Cyclops, there's a siren, the sirens, there's the seer, you know, there's Penelope style character, which plays the main character's wife, who's being suited by a suitor. You have a lot of stuff where there's a flood and water and washing and all kinds of similarities.
Which you'll see in the Odyssey.
Yeah, so if you know the book, if you know the story, you'll see it throughout. But it's so cleverly put there with humor. This movie's very well based in humor. And not awkward, but it is really good. That's what the Coens are known for, man. To bring humor to a lot. I mean, the only movie I don't think I ever saw humor from was No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
But that, and I'm glad they didn't put it in that because the story didn't need it. This story needs it.
Yeah, this was a comedy and adventure.
Stars George Clooney and Tim Blake Nelson.
Yeah, it's George Clooney, he plays Ulysses.
Yeah, which is funny because Ulysses is the character in Odyssey, if you not know.
You have Tim Blake, who's Del Mar, and John, I'm probably going to butcher his last name.
I mean,
Turturro.
Yeah, John.
Who's
good.
Who's in Do the Right Thing. We talked about Do the Right Thing.
Yeah, John.
Pete, he's Pete. Yep. He's like, oh, I just love all the characters. Like,
they're so cool.
Couldn't have asked for a better cast.
Don't forget you had John Goodman in it.
Yes.
As well. Actually, it was funny because the Coen brothers didn't want any other lead but George Clooney, and George Clooney agreed to without ever reading the script.
Because he knows how...
He loved the Coen movie stories.
And he sees how they are. He knows them and the relationship.
Yep, so...
Everett, who plays... I'm sorry. So $1.2 million has been hidden. So,
well, yeah, it's about Ulysses. Ulysses. Yeah, they think that they escaped from this chain gang because the main character, Ulysses, it has money hidden, and which you find out that's not the case. He's actually trying to get home because his ex-wife is getting ready to marry somebody he doesn't want her to marry. He wants her to marry him back. And he goes to jail because he was practicing law without a license. Mm-hmm. Like, he is this big puff, like this guy who makes up stories to puff himself up, make himself look better. And it's so cool. Like,
I think he was kind of scared to kind of...
It's just, he's a storyteller. Like, there's some moments in this film that he... You can see, like, I don't know if you remember, they were sitting around a campfire. They were eating gophers.
Oh, yeah. Oof.
Yeah, and he was telling stories, like, he was had like, claw, like this. He's a great storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
And everything. And what's just so funny about this is that it's set during the Depression in the Mississippi, and you feel it.
Mm-hmm.
You have different characters, like the governor. You have the governor's race. Between, you know, Papio Daniels and Homer
Stokes.
Yeah, reform against the old establishment. And you had, like, just these different types of ideology and economics fighting one another. And this story just goes right in the middle of it. And it's just, to me...
They travel through all of that.
They travel through all this. I mean, gosh, it's so good. Like... You have Bible salesmen, and you got Ku Klux Klan, which was funny about that was...
Fun fact.
The people who they hire for the Ku Klux Klan, they're actually military people, and overwhelming majority of them were all African-Americans under that. Which then is funny because the three main characters had their face painted black, and they were trying to save their friend Tommy, who was black. And when their masks were turned off, they said the color guard's color. So it's kind of funny how they had that.
They had no clue.
So yeah, it was.
What was really in front of them.
So.
Favorite scene? Do you have one?
Man, there's too many. Personally, because it's just there's moments there. It's just it gets you. Like the scene in the barn when the barn's on fire. It was my hair. And George Clooney's hair is always worried about his hair. Dapper Dan.
He's got to have the Dapper Dan.
Always got a Dapper Dan, which gets him in trouble. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have those moments like that. It's just, like, it comes out of nowhere. And, it's kind of like, it's funny how the humor is like a twist. It's a twist that keeps happening. It happens to you at moments like you weren't expecting it, and it gets you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just, to me, it's just amazing. Watching these actors that you've seen. You know, Tim Blake Nelson, which is funny, he was actually one of the Coen brothers' neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't never see him in roles like this, and to watch him on the screen and just play these characters that just you've never seen these actors play, and they nailed it. It's so amazing to me.
Yeah.
So I can't really say. I mean, I love the music because you have the man Constant Sorrow, which is the theme of the song of the movie,
mm-hmm.
which ended up helping them at the end because they record it into a can. Which you laugh at
that scene. That man with his eyes.
He's blind, woman.
He's something else. I don't have a... It's hard to pick a favorite scene. But I will say what I found really interesting in how they portrayed the sirens. Not your typical, like, mermaid, sea creature-like, but incorporated the water... of course, the three women. I just thought that was just a really cool way.
It was
of showing that in a modern setting.
In modern setting, to turn one thing, they turned them to a horny toad.
Yeah, and the song they were singing, like it was sirens. It was perfect.
Yeah, I mean, because you stop and look at this, like to me, it's funny how they took a book like that, like the Odyssey. And put these familiar character moments, you know, in that story, and brought them into the 1930s, which to me is so amazing. Like it was just amazing how they did that, and it wasn't like it was awkward. Cause we've seen some films where they've taken some adaptations, and just made it pretty horrible,
mm-hmm.
and you're kind of cringing, and you're like, oh my god, why did they have to do that?
Mm-hmm.
This, no. Yeah. Actually, you're kind of like, it's kind of like watching a Marvel movie, MCU movie, where you go, Easter egg or Pixar, Easter egg. Hey, that's one. Oh, that's so cool. And it kind of excites you.
Yeah.
And stuff when they bring those out and everything.
Perfect modern adaptation while paying homage to I would consider the Odyssey a classic.
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever read the Odyssey?
I have not, but
I have
studied a little bit of it.
I have
in school.
Odysseus. The main character's name is Odysseus. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's funny is if you think about him, it was a 10-year journey because he can't go home because he's the one who created the Trojan horse. So the gods of, I can't remember, Troy, mm-hmm. Basically curse him for a 10-year Odyssey voyage. And he's the only one who makes it back. The whole crew is killed along the way. I've read it, which is funny when you think about the story, is that no one on set had ever read the book except for Tim Blake Nelson. He's the only one who actually read the book.
Not even Joel and Ethan.
Nope. And I can sit here and say, in this podcast, in Coffee and Classic Movies, I'm the only one who has read it. And I hate reading.
And you know, and I'm in good company because I haven't read it fully. But absolutely. Fun facts. Fun. So we shared how the Coen brothers had not read the Odyssey, but yet it's as if they just knew. They're not the only ones working on this.
They knew the points of the film through pop culture.
References, yeah.
Yeah, they knew those areas. And if you know the book, you get that and everything as well. You understand that. And like again, their references to those points of the story are beautifully crafted into a story. And it's kind of like it's coffee. Smooth. It's very mm-hmm. smooth on how they did it. Because I'll say it again. It's really hard to make those references in films. In a story without it just sticking out like a sore thumb. And yeah. It's hard to have it really be smooth, but
seamless, yeah.
Yeah, and you're talking about two directors and writers, because they are screenwriters. They write their own stories. And actually, this is their first film they ever adapted, first adaptation they ever did to a film.
Which led to many more.
But people who write, they know how to craft a story and smooth out those edges, because it kind of reminds me of you, because you like to draw and you like to do charcoal, and you draw harsh lines with charcoal and you smooth them in and blend them in. And that's what they kind of did. They blended these reference points of that story beautifully into this story, which works. None of them felt out of place. None of them felt like that didn't make any sense to the storyline. It all fit. Mm-hmm. And it was like, this is right. And because that's what makes anybody who watches a film, whether you know Odyssey or not, you enjoy it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I'm slightly jealous of them because I wish this was a film I made.
Oh, I love this. If you have to ask me one of my favorite things besides the story and the acting, it's the cinematography, obviously. I can keep going about that.
Did you know George Clooney could sing?
Yes, he tried to sing for this film. He had been practicing. And they decided just to dub the music over top of his voice.
Yeah. I think
the only one who sang was
Del Mar.
Who was the actor? Tim Blake Nelson. He sings the what song?
Man.
Nope. Jail Hell's Rock. Oh, Jail. Yeah, he sang that song. That was actually him singing.
In the beginning, you see a chain gang. And they're singing, of course. And it's actually from a old recording of an actual chain gang.
Yeah. Which is really cool. And again, if you watch the film and you're listening to this moment, it feels so smooth. It doesn't feel like the recording's out of place. It doesn't feel like it doesn't belong there. When you watch it and you listen to it, it feels like it's just made perfect. And I think part of it is the cinematography. Mm-hmm. Kind of helps it to blend it together more too as well. Great film.
No, for those of you listening, and I just thought about this scene, a scene that made me like jump. Mm. The cow scene when they come in contact with Nelson.
Okay, so you'll see it there when you after you read this. That scene with the cow. Now,
how did they do that?
Obviously, that looks so you real. Obviously you know it is.
It's CGI.
CGI.
Right.
Did you know when this film came out, though, PETA had uproar. People really thought that they actually hit a cow and actually shot a cow.
Yeah.
Had a cow float on top of a roof. They were upset and they had petitions against the film, which then drove the people. This is after the premiere.
Yeah.
Which then, think about this. The film already had a good response because of the soundtrack. Right, people were eager to see the movie because of the soundtrack. The soundtrack really blew up. But the uproars from PETA and people actually drove people to go see the movie.
Yeah.
Which then they had to put out a public statement. No cows were hurt during the making of this film. It was all CGI.
Oh, my God.
Which is the early stages of what we call CGI.
Yeah.
Very early stages of it, so.
I really want to know. I probably won't know, ever know, but, like, that looks so real.
So real and so good, though. It was definitely, if you when you watch that scene, no steak was hurt.
Okay. I want steak now.
Well, definitely you're getting Mother's Day.
Definitely for Mother's Day.
By the way, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. Thank you very much for listening.
Oh yes! Oh my goodness, y'all rock.
Yes.
Which rock.
Which is then funny about this is that your Helen Hunt, which is one of your favorite actresses, plays the wife of Ulysses. Which we know her from, in The Incredibles.
Yes, The Incredibles.
And also to one of your favorite movies, we watched a couple years ago, came out, The Big Sick. Remember she played the mother. Helen Hunt. She is an extraordinary actress. And if you look at this film, she is totally something never seen before. Usually you see her as this hard-nosed woman who really drives a point, right, in the films. You saw that in The Big Sick, but in a very, I love the way
she in a motherly, like any mother would be.
But this film was totally different. She played like this character who is just like, she knows everything and everything she has to say is right. And she doesn't care, right? And it's kind of like, and whoever, the best man, let them win. I don't care if I find it track enough. If the best man, let them win, then I'll go with them. And she just has this, like, humor to her that is just incredible. And it balances so well with Ulysses' character and his humor. And, like, you find, like, these two different ends of the chart coming together. And it's really cool. They perfect casting in this film.
Yeah, and in the story they do reunite. He does.
That was a spoiler.
We've been giving spoilers like since we started the podcast.
Tony Stark dies in Endgame. Oh, do you want me to?
Oh my gosh,
go watch it. You want me to give you spoilers for Far From Home?
Stop it!
I already know the film.
No, you better not watch it, sir. Here's another real quick fun fact. The idea for the film was spontaneous, came about just all of a sudden, and the work that was being done on the script started in 1997, and was half written a year, like almost a year later.
Oh, sounds like somebody we know.
Sounds like ours.
Yeah, but it's okay.
Working on ours for over a year. We'll get it done.
Yeah, but your final thoughts on this film, this fine film?
It's a favorite that I look forward to watching again. I look forward to our kids watching it and talking about it.
It's definitely a movie that you can keep rewatching over and over again and not get tired of it. Definitely. It's if you want to talk about it on the rewatchable scale, it's at 100.
Yeah.
So.
And I do have a suggestion. Drink Basecamp Coffee by Blender. Yeah, try while it. You watch it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're not watching it right now, but we've been known to drink coffee while we're watching films.
Yeah, if you live in the Richmond area, you get the Blanchard's Base Camp at, I would say, the Blanchard Roasting House. But you can also go to Publix. Publix carries it.
Publix?
No, it doesn't. No, Kroger does not carry it, but local Publix stores do.
Okay.
Because they have an exclusivity to that person. But if you don't live in the RVA area, or if you do, you can actually go to blanchardscoffee.com. You can actually order it to you. Actually, you can pick up their subscription service. Actually, they're having a discount on their subscription services right now.
And so, they're coming out with new flavors.
All the time.
It's very good.
But just to say, scratch that popcorn that you have in your pantry.
Throw it in the trash.
No. We like popcorn, but it's just not with our movies anymore. So instead of, you know, trying to open
I
that.
Do sometimes.
You know, take that popcorn out. You know, still grab the coffee beans, and grind some up and make yourself and brew yourself a nice cup of coffee.
And enjoy yourself a classic movie. Thank you so much for listening to Coffee and Classic Movies. We hope you can join us next Saturday. We like to drop new episodes at 10 a.m. Don't forget to subscribe and share with your friends and family. Until next time.